and welcome to Chambercast, the Billings Chamber of Commerce's podcast, brought to you by Upstream Strategy Partners. I'm your host, Jack Genoway. You may have seen in the local news that School District 2 is making some changes, closing Washington Elementary School and opening an opportunity school in its place. To give us an update on that and everything else that's happening at the local school district, I'm joined today by our school superintendent, Dr. Erwin Garcia. Dr. Garcia, thank you very much for joining me today.
Absolutely.
So, let's just jump right into the main topic of discussion. For folks who haven't seen the newspaper releases about it, please tell us about the Washington Innovation Center, what your intended outcomes are, and what you recently announced, essentially.
Absolutely. So we applied for three charter schools with the Montana School Board Association, and we receive approval for all three programs. So the number one program is the early college high school, and the second program is the opportunity school. Those two will be hosted at the Career Center. I'm sorry, at the Washington Innovation School. And the third charter school approved was the Newcomer Center. That program will be hosted at the Lincoln Center. But just to dive in into the Washington Innovation Center, so the Early College High School is a program intended to give kids a pathway for career or college, where kids can obtain an associate's degree on the same day they obtain a high school diploma. We are right now talking to the neighboring districts, talking to the eighth graders, trying to incentivize them to apply. We already have the link. It's on our website. People can go in, and if they want to enroll in this pathway, all they have to do is go to the link and enroll, show their intent to enroll. And the second program at the Washington Innovation Center is the Opportunity School, and that is for kids that need an additional and a different way, a different pathway for graduation. So right now, we're talking about a proficiency-based process for those kids. It is a three-year program for the most vulnerable in our city. So when we think about kids that might qualify for the opportunity school, we're talking about, for instance, young families. Right behind the Washington Innovation Center, we have young families, and those are kids that have kids. We also have kids that work full-time. You know, they are the main or the sole providers of income to their families. We have foster care kids. We have homeless kids. And many of them not making bad decisions. Actually, many of them really want to have a pathway for success. The challenge with the Career Center right now is that in order for a child or for a student to access the Career Center opportunities, they have to be juniors or seniors. At the Opportunity School, precisely at Washington Innovation Center, those kids will have access to the Career Center, to the CTE program that we offer, Career Technology, immediately. So they don't have to wait. They can actually learn anything related to computer sciences, computer repair, computer programming, cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, Python, coding, robotics. All of that will be given to those kids, both at the Early College High School and the Opportunity School, but most importantly for the kids at the Opportunity School, because many of our kids, they don't want to just go sit down, read Shakespeare, answer 10 questions, get credit. They really want to learn something that can actually advance their opportunities to access the workforce. So that is exactly what we'll be hosting at the Washington Innovation Center.
Okay. This is just such a big, exciting project. My head is just swimming with a whole bunch of different follow-up questions that I want to ask you about this. I'd like to back up a little bit and start with a little bit of basics. For somebody who's not really familiar with this, they might have heard of charter schools before and know that it's something that gets talked about in education policy, but haven't really gotten an introduction to what it is. So what is a charter school anyway?
Sure. So a charter school is an alternative concept that allows you to have a level of flexibility, if we can call it that way. And the intent behind the two bills that were passed, the Anderson bill and the Suvinton bill, is to generate opportunities. The SUB in Tonsville, from my understanding, is still tied with some sort of legal challenges. The SUB in Tonsville opens the opportunity for private or for-profit or other organizations, even universities, that would like to have their own schools. The undersold bill, on the other hand, is the one that we used to apply, and that is simply attached to the board at the local level. So the charter school that we receive approval from the MTSBA pretty much is connected to our board. So it's locally governed. It follows district policy, but it allows us to be innovative. So the early college high school is the first in Montana. So it's the first time in Montana that we have a program like this. It's not so uncommon in the nation. We have 400 early college high schools in the nation. And the Opportunity School is innovative because it is not an alternative school. It's not a discipline school. It is a school where, by exercising the right given by the state and the board in this case, to have proficiency-based graduation pathways, we can certainly provide, you know, the opportunities for kids to access CTE opportunity, which is college and technology opportunities, while also being able to access their high school diploma and attracting a different population of kids that feel that they don't have a voice, they don't have a pathway, and this is something that will be innovative for them. So that's the entire context behind the charter school model, is to allow some level of flexibility, some level of innovation. And that's what we're doing also with the Newcomer Center.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I always thought of a charter school as a school that was not operated by the local school district. So yeah, it's I think it's good to clarify exactly what is being done here and how that relationship is going to work. I actually had a friend in college who went to, they grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada, and came to college with an associate's degree and was able to graduate college with their bachelor's degree in 2 years, which I was rather jealous of, to be completely honest. It seems like a great opportunity. So you've got the early college program and the Opportunity School at the Washington Innovation Center. You've also got the Newcomers School at the Lincoln Center. Talk a little bit more about that one.
Absolutely. So when I got to the city, I realized that we had a large number of middle and high school students that were newcomers. So these kids are either migrants or refugees that somehow ended up within our system. And currently they're struggling because we don't have any type of system. We don't have any type of accommodation or linguistic program. So kids just, sink or swim. Most of those kids, unfortunately, they flung within the system because, of course, they don't have the credits. When they come for their junior year, they speak no English. They don't have any pathway for graduation. So the risk is having these kids literally dropping out of school. So the Newcomer Center comes with the idea that we have to provide a pathway for kids that are coming in that speak, that are not able to manage the language accordingly, be successful within the context of middle and high schools, and give them that opportunity so they can learn the language, they can learn our customs. It's important for people to know and for kids to know that we pledge, to the American flag, that we respect our symbols, that we have certain rules and expectations. You know, acculturation and assimilation, those are two different terms. But we want these people to be able to acculturate, to not abandon necessarily their culture, but to understand what we expect as a society. But also, we want those kids to be able to access content, if possible, within their language. So we actually contracted Apex Edmentum, and they have many courses that are taught in Spanish and other content areas. But of course, we want to make sure that these people learn the English language. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we can do both. We can do the acquisition and we can still do the academic piece. So we anticipate having about 40 to 60 kids, middle and high school, at the Lincoln Center doing the Newcomer Center. And we are also a resettlement city. And this is a designation given by the Department of State. This wasn't me that came from Houston and decided to bring a bunch of migrants to the city. This was really a designation by the State Department. So there is an organization that is bringing migrants to the city. And these migrants are not necessarily the same that are crossing illegally through the border at this time. We might get some of those families. I mean, it's pretty obvious that cities like New York and Chicago are pretty overwhelmed with the numbers that somehow many of these families are going to end up here. So beyond the politics, beyond what people think about, you know, illegal or migration or resettlements, we still have to provide by law. We still have to provide the education. It's not my job to ask people for papers or documents mm-hmm. or legal or illegal. They come here. My job is to educate them. Someone else has to worry about the political aspect of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. Going back to the Innovation Center, you mentioned earlier that one of your main objectives here was to reduce dropout rates. Talk a little bit more about why that is, where we stand currently, and why you identified that as one of your priorities.
Yeah, I mean, every year we lose about 250, 260 students. That is, if you think about 5 years, you're talking about thousands of kids that unfortunately didn't finish high school. And most of them are literally just doing work that is just compensated by the hour. Many of them have no jobs. As I read in an article published last Sunday, NBC talked about, the title was Mexican Cartels Targeting the Last Best Place, America's Last Best Place. And they were referring to Montana as the last best place. Mm-hmm. So we had an opioid problem in Montana, but generated, according to the article, mostly by locals. Well, Montana is huge. And when it comes to the ratio of police officers and law enforcement and the presence in the state, it is very reduced because of its size, so the state size. So that created an opportunity for cartels. So according to the article, cartels are working with other, with some reservations and trying to recruit people to do their business. And we know in the context of our city, in the past month and a half, 2 months, we've had an spree of violence, and many of that violence associated with minors. And come to find out that, as we did a little digging, that most of those kids were dropouts. So there is a relationship between violence and dropouts, at least in our city. And what would be the best way that the district can contribute to making Billings the city that is intended to be, which is a great city, right? That is, if we address that problem right now, immediately, we can do it. So, of course, how do we get to a dropout? Well, it starts when kids, unfortunately, don't have the support of their families. As I mentioned, we have a large number of homeless, large number of foster care kids, a large number of kids being raised by their grandparents because parents are incarcerated. We have a massive number of kids that are in poverty. So then what happens with kids in poverty, with all those ACEs or those risk factors come to our system? Well, number one, they speak less words. They understand less words because they have spoken or heard less words. So vocabulary-wise, a child in poverty comes to the school system speaking, I mean, thousands of less words, or being able to understand thousands. According to research, it's about 4,000 less words than a child that comes from a middle-class background.
And does that research you referenced tell us why that might be? Is it a lack of time that the parents have, or a lack of resources in the house?
Yeah,
or?
And so just think about a middle-class family. You know, a middle-class family can, you know, let's watch the game. Let's go to Missoula, right? Let's go to the coast. Hey, let's take a cruise. Let's go to Disney. Let's go to the sea. Let's, you know, they have more experiences. They have the support not only of parents, grandparents, uncles, so they have families that are very supportive. Those some of those parents are reading to their kids, playing games with their kids because they have the time. And in many cases in poverty, the problem is are many of these parents that really want to do right by their kids. They mm-hmm. don't have the time. They have three jobs. Sometimes they don't have light. The kids are really thinking about what to eat, how to protect themselves from the cold, or even they are in the midst of violent environments. So that creates fear. And if you think about the pyramid of Maslow's pyramid of needs, the main and the most important needs that we have to meet are those physiological needs. And above that is safety. So unfortunately, in the context of poverty, there's so many variables affecting kids that limits their ability to be ready compared to their counterparts, middle-class kids or more affluent families. And then that in and itself creates a discrepancy because the teacher reads the book, but how many of the kids are actually understanding where the teacher talks about the Sahara Desert and sand and oasis and, you know, bringing some terms for a child that has some level of schema, a level of understanding can relate to that text. But the child that it doesn't even know what a desert is or have ever seen a desert. So that's the gap. And then when you come to third grade, there's a group of kids that are reading on proficiency. There's a large number of kids in poverty, especially in Billings, that don't read on grade level by the end of third grade. So then if you're not academically ready, then your own perception about school is different. You're struggling. You know, the kids know it. When you take a test and you get a 20 and the other, your friend gets 100 and you get the little stickers at the end of the trimester and you don't get anything, you know it. You know there's something that is affecting you. And unfortunately, sometimes our system is not able to catch up with the needs of the child. So when the child gets to middle school, they continue to struggle. We just look at the data from some of our schools in poverty, in middle school poverty kids, and proficiency levels of 19%. So that means that one of every five kids is on grade level. So then, of course, perception about schooling changes, readiness about readiness regarding school changes, and now you're on a pathway that is, let's be transparent, is failure. So many of these kids literally wait for to be 16 to drop out. And many go to high school, they're struggling, they want to access career opportunities because perhaps that's their pathway, but they have to wait until they're juniors or seniors. They don't wait. They want to be out. And that's what we see. So the opportunity school enters right in the middle of that process to say, hey, we're looking at your data. You're in middle school. You're struggling. Hey, we have a plan for you. You're in high school. You're struggling. You finished your freshman year. You have no credits. We have a path for you. And of course, how do we bridge the gap starting in elementary? So for that, we're opening the Kinder Ready program next school year. So the Kinder Ready program is intended to bring kids in poverty when they're 4 years of age to our schools. So we have three schools, Orchard Elementary, Bench, and McKinley. We already have the classrooms. We are in the process of hiring and posting those positions. Of course, the board is going to make that decision on the 26th, February 26th. Hopefully we get full support. And our goal is to bring 300 kids in poverty when they're four. Because what happens then is you're bringing a gap. You bring those kids, you give them academic readiness. You give them a positive entry to the school system. By the time they get to kinder, in proportion to their middle-class counterpart kids, they're well-equipped. Not only that, you free up some time for the parents at home.
Sure.
So hopefully they can, you know, take advantage of that time and advance in their careers or perhaps, you know, get a job or something that, or an extra job, or use that time effectively to for their own betterment. So I think those measures are helping bridge the gap. And the final thing on that is dyslexia services. So in the history of Billings Public Schools, we haven't provided dyslexia services.
Really?
And when you look at the data, where you find the most dyslexic people without identification the jail system. You go to the jail system, and that's when you find dyslexic people that have never been identified. So what happened with our kids when they struggle through and through, throughout their careers, and nobody was able to identify them? Well, they really thought that they had a problem within themselves. I mean, just think about it. You try to read, and now you see your letters. You're 4 or 5, and you notice that letters move. They're not steady and fixed. They move. They jump. Well, dyslexic people struggle not only with letter movement, they switch letters with numbers. So decoding, reading, understanding is affected by dyslexia. Mm-hmm. But if that's the only C you've seen, that's the only thing you've seen for your entire life, you think that's normal. The problem is when you're taking the test, you're not understanding. You're not able to compete with your partners. Now you're thinking you have a problem with, there's something wrong with you. So imagine the mental health aspect related to dyslexia.
Yeah.
So we were able to hire a dyslexia manager for our district that is going to do trainer of trainers, training principals. But we also applied for a grant, which we won with AIR, which will allow us to train all of our 3rd to 5th grade teachers in the district. Now we're going to provide a very robust dyslexia program for our kids.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and I'd like to tell our listeners about a really exciting event coming up at the Billings Chamber. Join us for the 2024 Billings Chamber Breakfast with former NFL football player and youth advocate Andre Reed on April 25th, 2024 at First Interstate Arena at Metro Park. Hear Andre Reed's inspiring story, gain insight into supporting local youth organizations, and learn how to make a positive impact on your community, colleagues, and employees. Chamber members get exclusive discounts on tickets at billingschamber.com, and for non-members, tickets are available at metropark.com. Chamber Breakfast featuring Andre Reed is brought to you by Nonstop Local, Rubicare Health Savings Program, Komatsu, First Interstate Bank, Eric Hotels, Intermountain Health St. Vincent Regional Hospital, Roar and Pearl, Next Era Energy, Advanced Care Hospital, Cushing Terrell, Valley Credit Union, Stockman Bank, KOA, Pepsi Cola of Billings, and Edward Jones. Get your tickets today. So in order to open up this, the Innovation Center, to have the early childhood and the opportunity school, you are closing down Washington Elementary School. I'd like to give you the opportunity to address some of the criticisms that I've heard about that decision. How did you go about that process?
So one of the challenges that as soon as I came into the system, into Billings Public Schools, was the budget deficit. So the elementary district has a $3.5 million deficit, and the high school district has a $500,000 dollar budget deficit. So the problem that the elementary district face is that we have 28 positions that are ESSER funded. So ESSER funded positions is pretty much COVID money. COVID money ends this year, so there's no more COVID money. So we're between a rock and a hard place. We fire those 28 interventionists, you know, for kids that need to read, for kids that need support. We fire them, we let them go, or we embrace them and bring them back to the general fund. Well, that costs about $3 million.
Okay.
So then you have $3.5 million, and then you are in $3 million, that's $6.5 million. And on top of that, we have negotiations with the unions. So people might say, well, just give them a 1% increase. Well, that's not possible. We're paying our teachers. We're the 51 in the nation for beginning teacher pay. That's how poorly we pay in Montana our new teachers. Now we have another challenge. Wyoming is paying way more than we are. If you go to Cody, Montana, your teachers are being paid an average $5,000-$6,000 more. That's Cody, Sheridan. So what happens? We're not competitive. I cannot just, in good faith, go back to my teachers in a context of inflation about 12% and say that we're going to give them a $1,000 increase. In actuality, the gap between the salaries that the teachers are making compared to inflation is about $5,000. So teachers are making about $5,000 less, although they're keeping their salaries, and supposedly we're paying them more every year based on their contract. So negotiations, every percentage point you give is $1 million in the context of Billings Public Schools. So if you go, let's say, 3 percentage points, that's $3 million. So now we have $9 million gap. So I cannot just sit down and wait for something to happen to alleviate the deficit. So the decision to close Washington was only intended to address the budget deficit. So closing Washington, between salaries and the management of the building, which is insurance and the other costs, is about $2.8 million back to the general funds. So in my proposal and in work with the budget committee, we came up with seven levers, seven actions that we have to take to balance our budget. And based on what we discussed with that budget committee, the seven levers will allow us to balance our budget. So we're going to have, finally, a balanced budget in the elementary district. So I could have proposed a building closure, just like Livingston did. You know, Livingston closed an elementary school. By the way, the name of the elementary school is Washington. This phenomenon that is happening around closing schools is so severe. I was reading an article at Anchorage, Alaska. Please check it out. We're talking about, I want to say it's about 6 or 12 elementary schools that they're going to have to close. There's another district in Colorado that has to close 18 schools. If you look at Missoula, if you look at Helena, if you look at many of our districts across the state, they are facing the same challenges. And that the root cause of that is really how schools are being funded, how the public education system is funded in Montana, which that's another story. But going back to the question, we propose a way to balance our budget. And one of the action steps was closing Washington. We could have just closed the building, turn off the lights, let the building be there for about 2-3 years. But the problem is, crime happens. So that community would have suffered tremendously. If you've closed that building, it's going to be filled with graffiti, trash. It's going to become a dumpster.
It becomes a blighted structure.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And we have another problem. The other problem is high schools. We have overcapacity in our high schools. We have a pretty much healthy budget. Even though it's $500,000 on a deficit, we can fix that quickly. Okay? So the high school, lack of career opportunities. We only have, if you add career center with AP and dual credit, you add those, how many kids are actually participating in the three? Only 2,000 kids. We have 5,600 high school kids. So there are 3,600 kids that don't have AP, dual language, dual credit, nor career opportunities. So we have a problem in the high schools and the dropout. And, you know, I can go on and go on. So instead, we looked for a win situation for the elementary, helping us balance the budget, and a win situation for the high school district, attending to a variety of issues that, with the help of the charter schools, are going to pretty much allow that community to continue to be vibrant. We're not making this school a discipline school. We're not going to saturate the streets with cars and trash and kids making noises. And I know some people have that perception about high schools. Well, that's not how we're going to operate Washington Innovation School. We have a set of expectations. We're working on the design process to ensure that we have the parking that is not going to affect the neighbors. And we're already working with the future principal of the school to make sure that we set the standards and the expectations in that community, because what we want is really the community to be vibrant and to benefit the entire city.
Yeah. And that was part of why you wanted to put the innovation school and the early college under the same roof, correct? So that you mix those kids that are on different pathways.
Because if you only do the opportunity school in isolation, then is the same thread, right? Native American kids, Hispanic kids, all poor, and all with, you know, challenges. And that shouldn't be the message that we want to send, because I really want to attract all kids. Mm-hmm. You know, there are kids that, you know, we had a situation in one of our career center, actually one of our high schools. The kid, super bright kid, good family, I mean, well-raised, no issues with credits or anything like that. The child didn't want to do the traditional pathway. The child wanted to immerse himself in the career center and was claiming and asking to enter the career center, but had to wait. So I want to make sure that this school is innovative, that when we're working with partners to make sure that the design, the way we're going to place kids, the way they're going to sit, the collaborative spaces are designed to ensure that when people walk into that building, they say, oh, I want my kid to come here. You know, that's the type of advertising I want for our family, so they can come in and join us in these two programs.
Yeah. Yeah. And a kid that has maybe been struggling with education earlier on in their life walks into a really nice building. They understand subconsciously, okay, I am being invested in by being here. People are dedicating resources to my education.
Yeah. And the opportunity school, every child in the opportunity school is going to have a mentor. And that's very great news, because that's something that the Chamber of Commerce have really pushed with some great leaders in our community that include Mr. Bob Wilmoth, that include Jennifer Owen, and other partners. There's a group of leaders working together to ensure that we provide mentors for our kids. And the Chamber has been behind the scenes really, really helping this. And every child will have a mentor, will have a business partner, because it has to be more than just the academic piece. We have to provide some, I guess, safety nets to ensure that our kids are in a position to be successful.
Another criticism about this project that I'd like to have you address, and this is frankly a concern that I share as well, is that the Opportunity School is for kids 8th grade and up, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And so it could seem on the outside like you're taking resources out of the elementary school system and putting it more towards higher grade levels, when some would argue that maybe you talked earlier about kids not reading on grade level at 3rd grade or something like that, that we should be dedicating more resources to the elementary students.
Yeah. So to respond to that, number one, none of the kids are going to an environment that is not correspondent to the services that they were receiving. So if you think about the three schools that are surrounding Washington, Newman, Miles, and Broadwater, well-run, well-equipped, with low numbers, very low numbers, by the way, and great leaders and great teachers. So the kids are not losing on the quality of instruction. Yes, for a child that was driving 3 miles, if the child goes to Broadwater and the parent is deciding to drive the child, it's going to be probably one more mile. Okay. All of the kids are being offered transportation.
Okay.
Every single child. All of the special education classes are moving with their teachers and their teacher assistants. So there's no disruption there. Yeah, it's going to be another building. It's going to be other set of walls. But the services are being provided just as they are. And when people mix the Washington innovation and don't isolate the problem that it was intended to address, then, oh, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Mm-hmm. In this case, the problem with the elementary district is that the elementary district is a total different district than the high school district.
Right.
Two different sources of funding, two different budgets. So the elementary district has to be dealt with. And if we weren't able to act on Washington, we still had to balance the budget. The problem is, what is it that you're going to take away, not only from Washington, but from the entire city? Mm-hmm. So just to give an example, many districts across the nation, the first thing that they do, they remove fine arts and music. So that could have been my action. So, okay, we're not going to close Washington, but we're not going to have music. We're not going to have fine arts. And we can have, for instance, special education services. So we're going to have to limit the amount of teacher assistants that support our special education classes. So just by making those three decisions, I would have affected every single child in the district. And that's not fair. When we run the numbers of the cost to pay for, how much did it cost us to educate a child at Washington, was $9,600 compared to kids at any other school. Most schools, you take about $5,000. So you're paying almost double to educate a child than to educate a child in another part of the city. And then to balance the equation, you take away everything associated with fine arts. I don't think that's fair. That doesn't help the kids from Washington. That doesn't help the kids anywhere. So the kids that are going from Washington to the other schools are not losing. I mean, if you think about it, plus kids grow up, they're going to go to high school. So that neighborhood will benefit, their own kids can benefit from the programs associated with the neighbor school that in this case is an innovative program for kids. So I understand why people will confuse those two, because if they don't separate the two budgets and the two districts and the two problems that we're trying to solve, and instead if they mix them up, I can see the argument. But I have it clear, and people, when I explain it, most people understand, oh, I see what you're saying. You're really trying to balance this budget. If you don't, then you take away things from kids and all kids. And that's really a disservice.
The other question I wanted to ask, the kids at the Opportunity School are going to be spending a lot more time than other kids in the school district on that career technical education. What are they not going to be spending time doing? What subjects are not going to be taught to them as much because there's a limited amount of time in the day?
So we are going to be embedding the content areas within CTE. So if you think about reading, math, and science, those three content areas will be embedded. So they're going to have to apply reading and use reading in the context of learning how to program a computer. They're going to have to apply mathematics in the context of how to do coding, reading articles regarding coding, or looking at scenarios of the frequency of, if I do this command this number of times, it has these implications. So if I do X plus Y equals this value. So, and the science, of course, you know, that's hands-on, that's pretty much applied to it. So we see that the kids will do everything, but in application, in the context of. So the goal with the many of the kids in Opportunity School will have the chance to go to their home high schools. So many, not all, but many of the kids will have the opportunity to go to Skyview, for instance, and do social studies and financial literacy and band or music, right? And then come back and then just focus on the CTE with embedded courses. So I guess the difference is you're focusing on proficiency based versus standard achievement. And all of the rubrics and the design of the coursework, pretty much we're building right as we go, but we are being informed by other successful programs in the country. Like, for instance, we're partners with the ACE Academy in Albuquerque. So we are partnering with them because they already have the design, and we're just trying to learn from them. Like, one of the things that we learn is on Wednesdays, kids have a flex day. Wednesday is a day for the mentors to come in, for the business partners to come in, or for the student to go to the business and have an internship experience, or for the child to work on projects. So it is a different design. You still have expectations because, again, this is not a behavioral school. We already have a behavioral program. So we still have the expectations. We still have rigor. But the expectation to graduate is different. Not less, no more. It's just different.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in career technical education as well. I was very involved in that growing up as a kid. And of course, we're big supporters here of the of FFA and BPA and all of those types of programs as well. So I think that's going to be a great opportunity. You mentioned earlier about the mentorship program that's going to be going on at the Washington Innovative Center. How else can businesses and individuals support these efforts to increase graduation rates?
So one of the ways is to, we're going to survey all of the students in the Opportunity School. We want to know what is their ultimate goal. What are their passions? We're going to help them because some of kids don't know the answer to that question.
Sure.
What do you want to do in your life?
Plenty of adults don't know the answer to that question.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So we're going to give them experiences. Like, for instance, Boys and Girls Club is willing to give us to lend us the VA sets, the virtual goggles that, you know, you can do career exploration. Today, for instance, we had a career exploration activity at the Lincoln Center. We invited first responders to the Lincoln Center. And we had tables for FBI, we had the SWAT team, we had paramedics, we have police, we have a variety of partners. So kids were able to go and rotate and talk to those people. We plan to do the same thing. We're going to have days specifically designed to connect kids with a particular experience. So that way we pique their interest. And if we see that there's an interest in photography, like for instance, photography or video recording, so video editing. So Channel 7, for instance, they say, you know what? If you were interested, well, we can have kids and we can give them experiences here.
Sure.
So I guess to answer the question is, as a business, think about what could be a good way to expose kids to the learning or for pathways that don't require a master's degree, that might require the child to be an apprentice and have an opportunity to access a job opportunity right after graduation or even in the middle of graduation. Like,
sure.
For instance, we have a partnership with St. Vincent's where we have, I want to say it's between 8 or 12 CNAs. Girls that are learning how to be on CNA and they're getting paid for it.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have now, we brought the culinary program to the Lincoln Center. We're building an $800,000 kitchen cafeteria because we want the kids to run the entire business, right? So what I'm trying to say is we're building a plethora of opportunities. We partnered with Sue Montana to have animal science experiences. So kids are going to go take credit at Sue Montana. And we're actually enrolling some of the kids to go to Sue Montana and take 2 classes there. So giving kids those chances to explore, pick their curiosity, and find that area where they see, you know what, I'm interested in this.
Yeah.
And we can help them find that mentor, that business partner, allow that kid to start doing hours of apprenticeship. And perhaps even if the child drops out, even if the child graduates, with a low GPA, the child can still access a job and can be an active and productive member of society.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not just not that there's anything wrong with trades education. In fact, we need a lot more tradespeople right now for a variety of different contexts. But I think it's really helpful to encourage people to think more broadly about what these pathways might be. It's not just, you know, swinging a hammer on a job site. It's not just what we think of as, you know, quote unquote, menial jobs. Not that I'm trying to degrade any of those, but there are some pretty highly technical things that you can learn how to do without a college education.
Think about artificial intelligence, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone with the expertise is making right now more than $500,000. If you're an expert on AI, you're making millions of dollars in a 5-year span. So we're going to give kids AI opportunities, right? Of course, it's not to the level that will get you to work in Google, but can certainly build your capacity to be able to use tools that if you go as an apprentice and you have already partnered with a company, a tech company, perhaps you can be more marketable saying, hey, I'm 17. I went through the Washington Innovation or the Career Center, and I have this 1-year certification that allows me to work with AI technologies applied to, say, cybersecurity.
Sure.
Oh, I warranty you, I mean, based on the numbers provided by Big Sky Economic Development very early in my tenure as a superintendent, they pretty much stated that there were two areas, the most needed areas in our city were related to health sciences and technology. So this is really a good way to get our kids ready for the workforce.
Yeah. Well, I think the best thing too, so many kids who come from disadvantaged backgrounds have that mentality of learned helplessness, right? And I think the thing that I tell kids when I'm talking to them about their career pathways or what they want to do with their lives in the future is you have to be adaptable. You know, you've got to just be resourceful and be a problem solver and be able to, you know, develop yourself in any area that you encounter. And I think that this sounds like something that really teaches people how to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So what else is on the horizon for School District 2 coming up in the near future? I mean, not that you don't have your hands full already.
Of course. So we have, we're asking the voters to, we're going to put in front of the voters a safety levy task. So we conducted an audit of all of our facilities. We've seen the impact that dropouts and the connection between dropouts and violence. We see multiple ways in which we can start preventing and building prevention in our schools. Thinking about gang prevention, thinking about dropout prevention, thinking about character development. Just, you know, as you read the news very recently about the kids that went to one of our McDonald's and the McDonald's owner had to close the business for our kids. That is something that is not acceptable. We need to invest in not only academics. You can be a genius, but if you can't behave in a McDonald's or you can't do the right choices when nobody's watching, then we're wasting our money and wasting our time. You know, character development is essential. It elevates safety. It elevates our community. It elevates the quality of education. You know, we have better teachers if we're safe. You know, we ask our students in middle school, how many of them felt safe in schools? Only 2 out of 3 felt safe. 2 out of 3 felt safe in schools, in middle and high school. Mm-hmm. We need to do better than that. It is sad that a teacher might feel, because of being afraid of being threatened, that the teacher wouldn't enforce a rule regarding vaping or regarding other things that happen in the school setting. So the problem with safety is if we ignore the cost now, we pay the price later. Mm-hmm. And our property values decline. People are less attracted to come to our city when they see that somehow there's violence or issues within our city, which, by the way, our city is an amazing city. I think we're in great hands with our leaders that we have. I think we're just going through a little dark cloud, but we have to invest in education and prevention. And I know the correction piece is absolutely necessary. I totally understand that. But we cannot ignore prevention. So the ballots go out on April 17. Of course, we're not telling people how to vote, but we ask people to vote. You know, just register and vote. Just make your voice heard within this very important topic. And so it's going to go on the May ballot, on the May election, but the ballots will go out on April 17.
Okay. And that will be a bond issue to fund improvements to.
Yeah, it's a safety levy.
Yeah. Is it a levy or a bond?
No, it's a safety levy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Bonds are intended to fund facilities. Levies and mills are intended to fund education.
Right. A mill is an ongoing source of funds. And those will be all dedicated towards safety improvements.
That is correct.
Okay. Are there any other, you know, noteworthy developments that you'd want to highlight today?
Yeah. Number one, I am very excited to know that in the area of special education, we've made tremendous strides. We have curriculum in our buildings. We checked the number of people that have resigned or retired compared to last year. Our numbers are looking much better when it comes to teacher retention, especially in the area of special education. We looked at our math data compared to last year and the years prior, and we're doing much better in mathematics in elementary and middle school. We have some areas to improve in reading. We have some bright spots. We are working with a group of teachers. We call it the Reading Task Force. We have a math task force. Some of the best teachers in our city, they're helping us define and design how reading and math needs to be taught within our district. We're generating a document that we're going to use as a baseline, but we're also planning for professional development. So professional development in our district is starting for the next school year, starting this semester. So we're working on the plan, because if we don't increase student achievement and student outcomes, then why are we here? You know, that's the way I know if I'm being successful. You know, sure. I can change the name of our school from Washington to Washington Innovation, all I want. But at the end of the day, bottom line, if student achievement is not increasing, mm-hmm. if student outcomes is not better in reading and mathematics, then I'm not the right person. And of course, I'm not going to allow that to happen. We're pushing hard, and that's our main priority. And we already see some results headed in the positives, but we want to consolidate that progress.
Okay. We'll put links in the show notes today to read more places where people can learn more about all the topics that we talked about today. We'll link to some of the episodes that we've done on the school district in the past, so people can go back and review those. But I hope that we inspired people to get more involved in their school district today, because it affects all of us, and there's some really exciting stuff going on right now. So thank you again so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Dr. Garcia for joining us today. And thank you to Upstream Strategies Partners for sponsoring Chambercast. If you would like to suggest a topic or ask a question, please feel free to email us at podcast@billingschamber.com. If you like what you hear, please rate us on your preferred podcast platform or recommend us to a friend. And don't forget to subscribe to Chambercast wherever you get your podcasts, because there is something here for everyone.